This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's up, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of District Baseball. Nick and Trey here, covering all the latest things in Nats baseball and around the league, including Josiah Gray, Jackson Rutledge, and everything in between, as well as a wild card race that is going on in these last few weeks of the season. But first, Trey, what's going on?
Nick, nothing much. I mean, besides all the great ball we've got coming down the stretch here, I mean, besides the Nationals, who are playing pretty poorly, other teams around the league are battling for playoff positioning, for playoff spots, for division titles. A lot of stuff going around the league right now, and it's definitely been something that I've been super entertained by. So if you're not really watching other stuff besides the Nats, definitely be taking a look. We're going to get to some topics on that later. But first of all, let's talk about Josiah Gray, because he finally had an extremely good start, Nick.
He did. And it's like, I told you so. Are we allowed to say that?
I think so. For that one. Yes, for this one.
It's like, obviously, if you listened to the last episode, you know what we're talking about. But we've been clamoring for a phantom IL stint or a pushed back start or skipped a start. And ultimately, I think they gave him like 3 extra days rest. So it was almost a full 10 days if you include the scheduled off day in there. And it paid dividends. Like, in, I know some people will say, oh, it's against the Pirates. Well, it's kind of the same Pirates team that went off on the game before. So it's not like Josiah just beat up on a terrible team. Like, that offense really came alive the game beforehand, and Josiah shut them down. It came down to 2 pitches, like really 2 pitches changes out. And he went 6 1/3, 5 hits, 2 runs, 10 strikeouts. But I think honestly, the most important part is the no walks. Like, yeah, he gave up 2 home runs, 2 swings, 2 home runs, and solo shots, thankfully. But like, the no walks is so significant for Josiah Gray this year, because he's actually decreased the rate in which he's given up home runs. Yeah, it's still an issue, but like, if you're going to have outings like this, this is a quality start. And obviously, 10 strikeouts, no walks, we will take that any day of the week.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't been this dominant since that start against the Mets from way back in like May.
April, yeah, May.
Something yeah, like it might that, have yeah. even been April, could have been. But I was really happy to see that he finally got that rest, and he was completely different. I mean, command was immaculate.
Yeah.
And if you've watched him the last 3 starts before this one, the amount of waste pitches were so, I mean, almost half of his pitches were waste pitches. Mm. It's like unbelievable. I mean, I can maybe remember 1 or 2, maybe. From that start.
Yeah.
So that's just a huge difference. It's really about command with him mostly anyways. I mean, the stuff will play if he can get it in the right spots.
Yeah. And it's just like a much needed finish. Obviously, he has a couple more starts, but a much needed wind down to the season. We wanted to see at least one more good start.
It kind of confirmed, yeah, you know, what we were thinking, which was like, is that August really him? No, it kind of seemed like it was more fatigue. So I think that was good for my confidence personally to see that. I'm sure it's great for his confidence as well.
Absolutely. And you know, as it stands right now, he's at 148 innings on the season, 4.07 ERA. Like, yeah, the walk numbers aren't spectacular, but you know, he tackled the home run numbers last offseason. It seemed to have worked. Hopefully this offseason he tackles the walk rate and just the strike percentage, and hopefully it's with a new pitching coach. So I think, like, if he want, so if let's say this his season ended today, like, I think that's probably the easiest hypothetical. 4.07 ERA, I'm taking that. That's like three, I was gonna say 70 math 0.7 better. I was going for a percentage there, but that didn't work. It's like 0.7 better than what it was last year. That's a obviously significant improvement from his rookie year, what was effectively his rookie year. I will take that 100%.
Yes, absolutely. And it's actually, in terms of ERA plus, above average.
Yeah.
So he's still been an effective pitcher throughout the entire season, mostly in the first half. But if you extrapolate everything over the entire season, he's still been above average in run prevention.
Yeah, I know you're big on run prevention after the whole Spencer Strider
thing. For awards and such, yes. Right. For future performance, maybe not as much.
And I think what a lot of Nats fans are just going through right now is just the ability to set proper expectations, like whether it be tempering expectations or, you know, kind of being patient with underperforming guys. Like, obviously it tends to be more the former than anything, but like Josiah Graves, an all-star, let's, you know, call a spade. He would not have been an all-star if that one per club rule was not in effect. But that does not mean like he wasn't having a good season or hasn't had a good season. But I think the all-star nod gave everyone these expectations. Oh, he could be an ace, and hell, maybe he could be, but like that was never his profile. His profile was like, you know, a middle of the rotation guy, like a very solid 3-4. And again, you know, with all the stuff we pointed out, if he has like a 4 ERA, that's a very league average middle of the rotation starter, and that's fine. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. And I think as long as we can stick to that expectation and like take these 6 inning, you know, 10 strikeout starts with the 4 innings, 3 runs, you know, high pitch count starts that he gave us the time before, like that's kind of what you're going to get with the middle of the rotation guy.
Yeah. I would definitely say the next thing for him is to increase the innings, which will also be helped out by, you know, limiting walks and pitches command per innings as yeah. well. Because now, you know, when you get those guys around the 4 ERA mark, you're like, okay, well, they have to be doing something else. And normally it's guys that are throwing a lot more innings. But great, you know, he's at 150. This is the most he's thrown, I believe, in his career. So he's still building up to that. And we'll have to see next season if he can continue to even go further.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, keep in mind, he was a converted shortstop. So like he's doesn't have a lot of innings on him. So the fatigue definitely starts to set in, and he's going to need more rest later in the season. So hopefully the Nats continue to, you know, be patient with him as the season winds down. Another guy we're probably going to need to be patient with is Jackson Rutledge. We were certainly patient with him coming up. He was a 2019 draft pick. You know, we thought we might see him last year, even the year prior, but, you know, injuries and kind of just performance have set him back, whatnot. But we finally got to see his major league debut last Wednesday. Could have gone better, but that seems to be a theme with Nationals pitchers in particular. If you go back, like, I think it's like the last 18 Nationals starters to make their major league debut, I don't think any of them have a win. Yoan Adone had the best start. He went like 5 innings, 1 run against the Red Sox, but he didn't get the win. It was a no decision. And if you go back until you do find a win, it's Steven Strasburg back in 2011, 2012.
I was going to point out the last guy who made his debut against the Pirates, I think, was Steven Strasburg. Right, and that start went slightly different.
Didn't we just mention something about like tempering expectations or something like that?
Yeah.
But yeah, Jackson Rutledge is definitely experiencing the welcome to the big leagues first start to forget type thing. 3 2/3, 10 hits, 7 runs, and honestly the worst part of it was his own catcher hitting him in the head with a throw down to second. I mean, for those that didn't watch a game or don't know a ton of Jackson Rutledge background, he's like what, 6'8", something absurdly tall.
6'8".
And to his credit, he tried to duck down to get out of the way of Drew Mealis's throw, and Mealis hit him right square in the head. It was just like, oh my
god. Just kind of added to the
right. Can anything else go wrong? So hopefully the next star, I don't know who he's lined up to face, Rutledge, that is. Hopefully the next start goes much better than his first start did against the Pirates.
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot of working from behind that really hurt him the most. He actually only had one walk total, but he was in, I mean,
that's because they were hitting the hell out of him.
True, because every count was 2-1, 2-0, 3-1, 3-0. You know, he was falling behind the entire, and then he's battling back with middle fastballs. You're going to get crushed in the majors. You can't get away with it. So that's something that we'll have to monitor. If he can start getting ahead, maybe that will really help him be more effective totally. And yeah, you know, first start, guys struggle in the first start. Things are moving a lot faster than you're accustomed to. And you know, we got to just, like we've done for all of our young pitchers this year, give them a chance to settle in. And I tell you what, actually, it's funny about that game is that the Nationals almost were able to come back and win despite the offensive struggles recently. And, you know, maybe if they had our homie Stone Garrett in the lineup still, they could have made that comeback. But unfortunately, the lack of offense since Stone has departed has really been noticeable, especially in the power department, because he was really starting to play well. And it's just a bummer because we've had a lot of young guys come up and just not quite make that the same impact. So the Nats lineup is really missing him right now.
Yeah, I credit to good friend Ryan Shack on Twitter, as you most likely know him. He was the one who pulled up the great stat, and this was a couple days ago, so obviously it needs to be updated. The Nationals are 47-42 with Stone Garrett, and are like 19-42 without him.
Yeah, something close to that. It's a big discrepancy there.
Like, yeah, for all the people that wanted to be like, oh, why the hell are we talking about Stone Garrett? Da, 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 da. Listen, you know, you are the same people who argued the value of Gerardo Parra and Matt Adams and stuff like that. Like, we can have Stone Garrett. Like, let us have
this one.
We're allowed to, like, have one. And it's Stone Garrett. But, I mean, the significance of that loss is beyond just, you know, the clubhouse presence. I mean, you saw how everyone was choked up when the injury happened, like Mackenzie Gore and David Martinez and everyone involved was obviously, you know, devastated by the injury. But like, the offense stinks. And, you know, we're not breaking any news here, but he was just starting to hit his stride at the time of the injury. And now it's almost been a month since the injury, just about. And, you know, the offense is just stunk in every way. Like the initial jolts we had gotten with Blankenhorn and Key Boom and Young, all of those guys have significantly cooled off, and now we're probably not going to see any of them next year. I mean, Young maybe, just because he's, no pun intended, because he's young, like he might get more of a leash, but I think the Carter Key Boom experiment is just about done. Blankenhorn was just a placeholder, if I've ever seen a placeholder. And you know, then you're getting into the Dom Smiths that shouldn't even be in the lineup to begin with, but there's no one else to take that place. Riley Adams is out for the rest of the year with a hamate injury, so even when he comes back, like, we're gonna be needing to watch his power ability, because obviously a hamate injury, for those that don't know, it was his left hand. Like, that's going to lead to issues swinging the bat for a while. And, you know, it just sucks that who ended up being like our key piece to the lineup is out for the season. And, you know, it's very noticeable day in and day out.
Yeah. I mean, and again, when it's this noticeable, it comes back to what we've been saying as well, which is this team lacks depth. This organization lacks depth. You have to have a guy that can come in and play a replacement level ball, and we don't have that right now. And you know, that goes down to a bunch of different things. That goes down to how we drafted, that goes down to what free agents we've signed, that goes down to ownership giving free agent money. We're going to be seeing a lot more of it probably, because Mike Rizzo's back, baby, officially extended. We kind of assumed that was going to happen. you know, as far as what they've said, this is the most committed that both Rizzo and the Lerners have been, according to themselves. But obviously we have not seen that. So going into this offseason, you know, they're talking a big game, and if they don't deliver, that's going to be a problem.
Yeah, I just don't even know what to expect, really, because, you know, you have the billionaire defenders and Lerner defenders. And, you know, I talked about them last episode, and, you know, we don't have to dive into that conversation. But I just can't help but wonder if the Lerners are going to say they're keeping the team and try to PR spin it as, oh, we believe in this team, we don't want to go anywhere, when in reality, they're not getting an offer that they want, which we all know is the case. Like in the Angels case, and the Angels, we'll talk about them, they're just the gift that keeps on giving. Like the owner put the team up for sale and then publicly announced that he's not selling the team anymore because he didn't get offers. And if the Angels, who are located in Southern California, and had, at least at the time, Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani, like if they couldn't get the offer they're looking for, like the Nationals certainly weren't getting. I mean, we know the Nationals didn't get the offers they were looking for, but there was never a public announcement that the Lerners were keeping the team. So now it's just all of this like vague media, you know, PR spin type narratives.
It's so obnoxious.
Crazy. But you know what we do know is, like you said, Mike Rizzo is back, and if you look at his track record over the past couple of years, it's going to be a very frustrating offseason,
more than likely.
First of all, the crop is not as great as it has, and certainly there's pieces to be had, but it's not as great as it has been in the past couple of years, and they weren't spinning in the past couple of years. You know, you hope that the Steven Strasburg retirement, you know, it gets settled in some way to free up some money, but they're going to owe him something, and more than likely owe him the full thing. So it's not like that money necessarily comes off the books. The only benefit you get from that is the cleared roster spot. It is the last year of Patrick Corbin's deal, which, hallelujah, never thought we would get there. So maybe they
almost
try to
free.
Maybe they try to make a deal a year earlier if there's someone they really like, but I'm not too optimistic about that. So in all likelihood, it's going to be bargain bin shopping. I don't see anyone getting an AAV over like $6 or $7 million. And even that seems to be pushing it, because they're going to cry poor over the Strasburg and Corbin deals for as long as they can. And especially when the Scherzer deferment, I think they're already paying the Scherzer deferment. So anyway, yeah, they're going to cry poor. And, you know, Rizzo is Rizzo, but I do think his job is exponentially more difficult with the state of the ownership.
Yeah, you know, that's what I was going to say, was I don't mind Mike Rizzo when he's got some free agent money to play with. I think that's his strength, is yeah, signing some of those contracts. But it's, you know, as much as they're saying that they're committed, actions speak louder than words. So you got to invest back into this team this offseason with free agent money and also scouting and international stuff, international player development. Yeah. So it's been something that all the actions we've seen indicate that you are not going to be putting money back into this team. So we got to see something this offseason for me to even consider buying into that. But yeah, I don't know. The state of the Nats, they're kind of in a weird spot because, like you said, they're just vague about things. They don't definitively say, we are selling or we're not. They're just kind of like leaving it up to our imagination. So then we just kind of have to sit here and speculate, and nobody knows anything.
Yeah, and then everyone's like, oh, you can't trust the Washington Post reporters. You can't trust the Athletic reporters. They have it out for the Nats. Like,
yeah, the conspiracy theories start flying.
Has it out for the Nats of all teams?
I don't know.
Like, do the Nats do that, like, require conspiracy? It's such a joke. And the last thing I'll say in the matter is, do not believe anything Mike Rizzo says on the freaking junkies. Like, that is, of course he's gonna say what like everyone wants to hear, or like what the truthers want to hear. Like, this is the same man in the same show where Mike Rizzo said, I am not trading Juan Soto under any circumstance, and then a month later traded Juan Soto.
I was going to bring up, I saw a tweet that said, it was really funny. that Mike Rizzo must have strapped on his contract as a bulletproof vest to take all of the shots for the learners after signing.
Honestly,
it.
Right. And I'm not even saying like the Juan Soto deal was the bad move. I think it actually was a good move, but I'm just bringing it up as like, you can't believe anything he says, because he's going to show face, because that's part of his job. Right. And like you just pointed out, he's going to be the guy that takes all of the criticism and the hits and the bullets and, you know, all that stuff, because again, that's his job. So don't listen to anything the junkies put out. I have that opinion anyways, but especially when Mike Rizzo goes on there, basically don't believe anything.
they never definitively say anything.
The truth is somewhere in between. Like, if you don't want to believe all the athletic stuff, fine, but don't fully believe what the learners and Rizzo put out. Like, that's just, you know, the pot kettle situation. Like, it's just, whatever. But let's move on to someone else's misfortune. But before we do that, let's get a word from our sponsors.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, we're back and talking baseball. And I mentioned it earlier, but the gift that keeps on giving, the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, I guess they're still of Anaheim, right?
The Anaheim, Los Angeles, Anaheim Angels of Anaheim, Los Angeles,
California. Yep. This was a bizarre news story, at least the way it was presented, you know, talking about media oddities and whatnot. So it was reported Friday night, that Shohei Ohtani had cleaned out his locker and left the team. That's how it was presented to us being, you know, the fans, the consumers. So obviously everyone was speculating, and they're like, wow, Shohei was just done with the franchise. He just could not be more gone. Like, the Angels are, you know, absolute laughingstock, which they are. I can only defend the decision to buy at the deadline so much. Yeah, they should have just taken the haul, but I appreciate them trying. Like, I think more teams should try. It's just this one happened to gloriously blow up in the worst / best way possible, depending on your perspective. Turns out that Ohtani is preparing to have elbow surgery on his torn UCL. He was on the injured list with a strained oblique anyways, which effectively ended the season. Obviously, the Angels are out of the playoff race that they tried so hard to put themselves into. But alas, the Shohei Ohtani saga, that makes it sound like it's his fault, but the Shohei Ohtani era in Los Angeles ends unceremoniously with Ohtani on the injured list and preparing for surgery.
Yeah, huge bummer, because I also agree. I thought it was fun that they went for it, although maybe not the smartest thing.
Not our team. We don't care if they're smart.
Exactly. We are here for the entertainment value in that case. It was just weird how the sequencing of the reporting, the reports came in that he cleared his locker out. There was no announcement of his injury for like a day. And then it was just an injury, but it was just very strange how, you know, they didn't say anything for so long and everyone's like, what's going on?
Yeah.
And like, I don't know. The Angels PR department needs some work.
It's also like, if, you know, to expand on the Angels just for a minute, Anthony Rendon came out this week and said, you know, he was dealing with, is it a fractured tibia or something like that?
That's correct. They
just found out. And he's like, yeah, I don't know why the team didn't announce it. Granted, Rendon could have announced it himself, like the 7 times he told reporters to piss off.
Yeah, neither but, side in that whole thing is in the correct
lane. And then there was the report that, I'm not even kidding. I am paraphrasing, but I'm not even kidding. This is how it was presented. The Angels will trade Mike Trout if he wants to. It's basically like, if you want to, we'll trade you.
Wink, wink.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And it's like, again, you know, they missed out on trading Ohtani. And, you know, you look at potential packages and prospect hauls to jumpstart a franchise. I obviously Juan Soto is going to be the comp. And I don't think Mike Trout in age 31-ish is going to net the haul that Juan Soto did. Granted, he still will net a significant return should they decide to trade him. But it's just like the way they're going about things. It's like, yeah, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Hey, you want to be traded? Because it'd be kind of cool if you did.
Yeah, I'm assuming he's got a no trade clause in his contract. And
the contract itself is basically a no trade clause.
that's a good point. But I think he does have one because otherwise imagine. I could just do it. But the no trade clause that they included, they have to now get rid of. So yeah, that's they're just a beautiful disaster. And I absolutely love them.
Yeah,
but you know, in terms of I think we should move on to some actual playoff teams here. We've been talking about the Nats, we've talked about the Angels.
Yeah,
neither of those teams are even close. We got an AL East race right now that's coming down to the wire. We had a 4-game series between the Rays and the Orioles, and you know what, Nick? I said at the beginning of the season I was not going to forget the Rays. Last week I forgot the Rays, I slept on Houston. I slept on the Rays, so I forgot about them. They're really good. They show up to Baltimore, win the first two, tie it up. But then the Orioles won yesterday, and they walked it off today to go back up by 2 games in the AL East. But that's coming down to the wire still. I'm pretty sure that they don't play each other again. So it's going to be just the win-loss thing. No direct influence there. But really, also, really great series.
Yeah, I didn't mean to cut you off there. The Orioles also, with the win on Saturday against the Rays, they clinched the season series against the Rays.
Tiebreakers.
Yeah, so tiebreakers are important. Yeah, they're up by 2 games right now, but should, you know, they end up with the same record, the Orioles will win the division because...
they're essentially up by 3.
Right, exactly. So, you know, the Rays will be a playoff team, but, you know, if we're talking about home field advantage and stuff like that, they won't have it because... Well, they could. They just have their work cut out for them with about 2 weeks left in the season.
Yeah, and the Rays are playing really good ball right now as well, heading into the playoffs. So that's some momentum. They got Zach Eflin pitching like an ace. Tyler Glasnow didn't pitch so well against the Orioles, but I still believe that he's one of the most talented guys in the league when healthy. And it's just kind of trying to find that third guy. They have the guy. They have two different guys that were injured that could have filled this role, McClanahan and Jeffrey Springs. If you remember, he actually got hurt against the Nats in like April.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I didn't even realize he came back.
No, he didn't. He's hurt.
I thought you were saying, yeah, I was like, I'm pretty sure he was out.
Be a guy. Yeah. That could fill that role. But now, you know, just looking at the starting pitching, but obviously the Rays have done it their own way with their bullpen games. So anything's possible. They made the World Series with that approach before. And their offense is incredible. So if they can just get the pitching, that's another team in the playoffs that's dangerous.
Yeah. I think who'd you say their first two guys were?
Eflin has been their big signing in the offseason. He's been really, really good. And then Glasnow.
When I think Eflin, I think Guardians, which I can't explain how my brain works, but I was going to bring up Aaron Civale. I don't even know if that's how you pronounce his last name.
Yes, that's a good point.
You know, their big deadline acquisition. He's a guy that, like, it just would not shock me if playoff time he becomes, like, the Cy Young guy for the Rays. Granted, he hasn't been, like, exceptional in his time with or since the trade. He has like a 4.4 ERA, but he had like a 2.3 ERA with the Guardians. And, you know, both the Guardians and Rays are known for their pitching factories and getting the most out of their pitchers. So I just bring his name up because he's a guy that could easily step up in my mind to give the Rays that, you know, necessary three-headed option. I'm not going to call him a monster right now because I think they all three of them need to really step up to get the Rays, you know, back to the World Series and obviously win one. But I wanted to mention him. The other guy that pitched really well in the series was Grayson Rodriguez. Like, he looked exceptional against the Rays, and he's a rookie. And, you know, you definitely back to the tempering expectations part if you're an Orioles fan, but you have to be super pumped about what you saw from him this last start against the Rays. Basically a playoff game, and for him to do what he did is, you know, just exciting. Like, if you're a baseball fan, I guess if you're a Rays fan, not so much, but if you're a baseball fan, it was exciting to how many innings? Like eight innings, five hits, no runs, and seven strikeouts, zero walks. And again, what was basically a playoff game. So they will need, if there's one way to exploit the Orioles, it's through their pitching, specifically their starters. They don't have that, you know, fear inducing starter, but they have some guys. So, you know, if you're going to get to them, you need to get to them early. And if a guy like Grayson Rodriguez is going to do this in the playoff time, like, good luck.
Oh yeah. That was his final strikeout where he got the K and let out basically
The roar,
a primal roar.
Yeah.
I mean, I had chills up and down my body from watching that. I mean, it's just purely great baseball, playoff atmosphere at home, home crowds behind you. You've shoved all game, and getting through that eighth and finishing that strong, that's really impressive. And if he can continue that momentum, he could be the ace for the playoffs. They've obviously said he's got that potential for a while. We haven't really seen it until recently, which is, you know, this is the time you want to tap into that potential, is right about now. So that was really impressive. Both the Orioles and the Rays. Give me this series in the playoffs. Seven games, let's go. I mean, you could not ask for much more as a baseball fan.
Yeah, I don't know what will need to happen, because obviously we're going to need to see how the wild card shake gets out, to see what the bracket would look like and stuff like that. But yeah, I'm all for that come playoff time. That would be like the series in my mind.
One of the best for sure.
Speaking of the wild card, it has changed, believe it or not, in the past week. So if you're looking at AL, the Rays hold the top spot. I've seen 92 wins, you know, to this point, we'll get you there. Toronto has been playing better baseball as of late. They're now in the two spot in terms of the wildcard teams, and Texas has overtaken Seattle for that final playoff spot. But Seattle's just one game back. So, you know, they had a scorching August. There's no reason to think they couldn't have a scorching finish to the year and really propel them ahead of Toronto or Texas to get that final wild card spot. And in the NL, we basically have like a four-team race for two spots. The Phillies are looking comfortable for now. Obviously, you know, they have a lot that needs to go right for them. The Cubs and the Diamondbacks are actually playing on Sunday Night Baseball as we record this. They're kind of tied for that second wildcard spot. The third team that's tied for the second wildcard spot is the Marlins, who I feel like we collectively as the baseball fans and media have not been talking about, like the Marlins. And I think a lot of it is because of how good they've been against the Nats, but playoff team is playoff team. And, you know, they're firmly in it with the Cubs, the Diamondbacks, and then the Reds are half a game out. So we have some crazy wild card, you know, races going on in the last couple of weeks of the season, and the expanded playoffs are working. Like, there's more teams in it, and it's going to lead to like a really entertaining final 2 weeks of the season.
Yeah. I mean, speaking about the series this week and this weekend, I mean, you got the Cubs and Diamondbacks going 13 innings last night, or the night before. I can't actually remember which day it was, but it was insane. You got the Braves getting swept by Miami. The Marlins had a grand slam yesterday by Jazz Chisholm. They had a grand slam today by Jazz Chisholm. I'm pretty sure I got to give myself some credit here, because I'm pretty sure in one of our series breakdowns with the Marlins, I mentioned that, you know, Miami was slipping and they needed Jazz Chisholm show up if they wanted to make the playoffs. Well, I mean, show up. He's going off right now. So that's crazy for them that he two grand slams in back-to-back days. You're kidding me. That's insane. Same player. Crazy stuff. The Cubs, I kind of was thinking they were going to pull ahead, but they're 3-7 in their last 10. So they're playoff spot is not safe, especially if they lose. If they lose tonight, they drop down with Miami. So they would be tied for third in that case. Yeah. So it's going to come down to the last series, I think. I mean, you know, at this point, San Francisco has kind of fallen off. They lost some games to the – I mean, they're still there, but they've –
they're there, but I'm not really including them. If you want to for the five-team race purposes, I'm all for that, but I don't view them as a legitimate threat.
Yeah, they were trending well, and then they lost three to the Rockies. That's going to hurt. So, you know, they could still make it, but their offense really needs to step up big. The Reds are right there as well. So it's going to come down to the last series for at least one of these spots, potentially two spots in the National League.
Bad radio here. Did not realize the Pirates had 70 wins.
Yeah, they're not bad.
They're bad at all.
That beginning helped them, but yeah. You know, they managed, they kind of did, you know, they kind of had a Nationals thing where they slumped in like June and July and then kind of figured it out in August. So they got some young talent there. So
just registered. Yeah, they could finish the year with like 74, 75 wins. Yeah. That would be really
encouraging season for the Bucks.
But going back to the wild card before we move on, I think we're both wrong, and I think everyone's wrong. The Padres are going to go on a historic run and then just get that final wild card spot. Well, Juan Soto, dude, two home runs and a grand slam today. So.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, for the sake of my preseason predictions, I hope you're correct, because they might have been my World Series pick.
yeah, I think I had them as well. I think I had Blue Jays, Padres. I'm right there with you. But I also had Corey Seager as a top three AL MVP finisher, and it's still Shohei Ohtani's. I'm not trying to argue that, because Seager has missed some games too. But Corey Seager is having an exceptional year, and this might be the only victory lap I get to take. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yes, you did. You nailed that one for sure. And you did say specifically that he could win the MVP. And if you know what, I think we should give him the Shohei Ohtani Award for players that win the MVP if Shohei Ohtani does not exist.
Right.
I think Corey Seager would be the number one candidate for that this season.
Love that. Speaking of victory laps, this is a victory lap I could not take. And I know I was not alone in this, but with the Mike Rizzo news meant that there was no longer a possibility to get David Stearns, who, if you don't know, was with the Brewers for a long time. He was instrumental in the Christian Yelich trade. And yeah, like Yelich might not have continued on with that hot start that he was on when he first got to Milwaukee. But the Yelich trade was as clear of a win for a team in a trade as you could possibly get. I mean, all of the players that went back to the Marlins became nothing. So, you know, he was instrumental in that. He, you know, basically got Freddy Peralta for Adam Lind. Like he's made so many instrumental moves. And yeah, you think Brewers are like, oh, well, the Brewers haven't done anything. I mean, this guy was the prized free agent. I mean, not a free agent, but like if there was a free agency for front office personnel, this guy would be the top. This guy, I'm not going to say he would be the Shohei Ohtani, but damn near close. This is a guy you go out and get. But not only did the Nats not get him, the Mets got him from the Brewers, which is
smart hire, actually, is what it
honestly,
is.
But like it's just so frustrating, because the Mets can go from super team, $360 million payroll, to fire sale, laughing stock, to purchasing like multiple top 100 prospects, including the brother of Ronald Acuna. And now hiring like the, you know, cream of the crop in terms of GM candidates and analytically driven minds, and, you know, ushering in the next wave of like, it's not fair. It's just not fair. And they're going to trade Pete Alonso in the offseason, which is the smart move, because I actually do believe Pete Alonso is overrated. Still good, just overrated. Like, you know, they can coexist. But they're going to trade him, get more prospects, and David Stearns is going to have so much to maneuver and play with. And he has, you know, billions of dollars at his disposal in Steve Cohen's pocket. It's just unfair if you're a Nats fan. Like between the Braves and the Mets and the Phillies having, you know, seemingly sustained at least decent success for the next few years, it's tough sledding in the NL East at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, you pretty much nailed everything there. The one thing I'll say is, you know, he's kept the Brewers competitive with a shoestring budget.
Yeah.
And they don't pay anybody ever. And they've either been division winners or they've been in it at least at the end of the season, like every season he was there. I will actually say I disagree. I think I'm gonna say that they extend Pete. And the reason I say that is because I get the view of trading him, obviously. I understand it. I just don't see, you don't get 40 home runs a season from that many guys anymore. Yeah. And that consistency is the reason why I think that they will actually end up extending him. But it wouldn't surprise me if they went the other way and traded him for prospects as well. That kind of consistency is probably enough.
I mean, they basically, like, as big of a hint as you possibly could give without actually saying that he's on the market, they've basically said they're going to trade him. Like, they almost traded him at this deadline. And granted, Stearns wasn't there, and Stearns could come in and be like, no, I advocate for Pete Alonso, he's not going anywhere. That could happen. Because, you know, you still have Lindor as a long-term piece and some other guys that are there for at least the short term. So, you know, Pete Alonso could be another cornerstone for sure. But I don't think he's the analytics darling that, you know, Stearns might like. So it'll be something to watch. But regardless, you know, the Mets suddenly have the prospects and, you know, the ammunition, whether it be in the draft or free agency or whatever it may be, or trade capital to, you know, really reboot very, very quickly, which is just frustrating. But that's not to say the Nats don't, because if we take a trip down to the farm for our minor league segment, as we wrap up this show, the Harrisburg season officially came to a close today. Their game actually was canceled due to weather. But it ended their season, so we have the final numbers for some of the top prospects in AA that are in the national system. If we start with James Wood, and, you know, there was an argument that he could have been called up to AAA prior it being the end of the Harrisburg season. But his final numbers in AA, 262, 353 for an 873 OPS, 26 home runs, 91 RBIs. That screams AAA ready to me, you know, over a 473 at bats. I'm more than happy seeing him in Rochester next year. If you go to the other guy that spent a lot of time in AA, Brady House, the advanced stats aren't his friend. Like, his BABIP was exceptionally high. But if you just want to look at the base stats, he had a very, very solid season. 312, 365 on base percentage for an 862 OPS. 12 home runs, 47 RBIs, and 340 at-bats. I think both of those guys are going to start the year in Rochester, without a doubt, in my mind. What are your thoughts?
I mean, you could almost argue James Wood's got a shot at a spring training if you want, but I think they'll probably be slower with him. So I agree. Yeah. He'll definitely start at AAA. I don't think there's any reason to even put him back in AA.
No.
Brady House is probably also going to start in AAA. I was really impressed with his opposite field power returning this season. That was a big deal for me to see that he still has that opposite field power after his injury last year. So I think both those guys, you're right, they're probably going to start a AAA. Then you got Lipscomb as well, who is kind of up in the air. He can play multiple positions, so that kind of helps him. So you can potentially see him starting a AAA, and then you know, Dylan Cruz probably not ready, but he's obviously a huge name. So something to monitor, like how quickly will they move him up if he does play well at the beginning of next year. That's something to monitor. Robert Hassel, that's the last guy. Robert Hassel probably shouldn't go anywhere near Rochester right now, considering the season he just had. Maybe you want to send him back down to friggin' low A or something.
The FCL, I mean, yeah.
Yeah,
geez,
it was rough. It was rough for him.
Yeah. I definitely misspoke when I read off Brady House's stats. I read off his total minor league stats for the year. If we're just isolating double A, it's 139 at bats, but he still did well, 833 OPS, 324 average, couple home runs. So he's still at a fine season, and it doesn't change my opinion that he starts in triple A, but I just wanted to, you know, do some housekeeping there. Lipscomb would be the other one that I truly wonder if he does wind up in triple A, at least just, I think he does at some point, but to start the year specifically, he got off to a scorching start to the year and then really cooled off at the end. But, you know, his final numbers make you wonder if he could really hit the ground running again in AAA and then to start the year, but in AAA and then really ride that wave into a, you know, midseason call up next year. I'm with you. Robert Hassel III, it needs to show a lot to even get called up to AAA, let alone the majors anytime soon. The one we do need to talk about is Dylan Cruz. Everyone kind of knows how much he struggled in AA following the aggressive call up. I think he spends more time in AA to start 2023, but I 2024. But I think, assuming he does well, he could rejoin, presumably Wood and House in AAA sooner rather than later. If he, you know, has a good offseason, productive offseason, and, you know, kind of irons out all of the deficiencies he had in his short stint in AA this year.
Yeah. And I will say it seems as though they kind of are trying to keep this core together in a sense. Like, this is the next wave of guys, you know, with those five, and also, you know, Pickney and Morales, I think, are now included in that list as well. So they're probably trying to keep that as like the next core together as much as they can. But I think Wood and House starting in AAA would make the most sense.
Yep. Agreed. So that leaves some optimism for the Nats. Obviously, you know, we want to see some more from some of the prospects, but, you know, the big guns, Wood, House, and even throw Cruz in there. Like, I think that's just too small of a sample size to indict him as, you know, a failure or anything like that, which I don't think anyone's doing. But I think, you know, he just needs a larger sample size to get his feet under him. Like, he's only played in, what, 40 minor league games. I think he'll be fine. So yep. The future for the Nats is just fine. You know, they're on a good path. Be aggressive in some areas, but, you know, be patient where, you know, where it's needed. But that does it for our report on the farm and for this episode. Trey, you got anything else before we send everyone home?
All I can say is just make sure you're watching baseball. I mean, there's so much good ball right now, guys. Don't miss it. Seriously, don't miss it.
Yeah, this is the time where it is, especially if you're out of the playoff picture, like I've seen the Nats are, you shift your attention to Major League Baseball and just the playoff races, because you do get like these playoff games, you know,
in the regular season.
Before
absolutely the playoffs, the entire Baltimore and Rays series felt like a playoff series. And that's what you're going to be getting down the stretch. So please don't miss it. I know football's back, but but just pay a little attention to baseball. Promise. Yeah. You won't be disappointed.
Yep. And if you're me, football sucks too. So, all right, that does it for this episode. Be sure to like, subscribe, comment, review, all that good stuff. Be sure to obviously check out the YouTube page if you're listening to this on podcast form. And if you are on the YouTube page, like I said, make sure you're subscribed and, you know, like, comment, review, all that good stuff. We will be back next week covering more baseball and hopefully a better week in Nats baseball as well. In the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter/X. All of our handles are below. The show is at DistrictBSB. We will catch you next time. Later.
Peace.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.